Breach Burn Podcast, Zach and Scott, to discuss Castor, the Neverborn Rezzer, who's great. He definitely has helped. But these guys have played Castor, or played against him probably too.
Yeah, so, once or twice. Or maybe a little bit more.
Snickers bar beat stick.
But yeah, my games so, I've played with him, I've really enjoyed him. I think he definitely gives some different avenues for either faction if they want to try something different.
Yeah, and I guess before we start, which factions have you gotten mostly?
I've played him in both, mostly in Rezzers, since I've been using him quite a bit in the Vassal League we've been doing, and I declared Rezzers, but I have tried both versions in Neverborn as well.
Okay. You are the most wishy-washy Neverborn player ever. You big old hypocrite.
No, just, you know, you gotta a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, you gotta feel out the flavor.
I don't think, like, 3 months of column B is feeling out the flavor.
Well, you know, gotta kind of look at my side faction, you know. You know, some people have side chicks, I have a side faction.
The grass is clear on the other side.
Yeah, well, in Rezzers, you know, all that fertilizer that they add to the soil with those dead bodies, your grass is going to be greener.
We are rich treants.
Excellent.
All right, with that solid discussion to start things, should we start with Awakened or Fervent? Who do you think is the A version and who...
I think the Awakened is the A version.
I would agree with that.
He comes first in narrative, and quite literally his time.
Okay. Sure. So, I mean, this guy has a lot of pretty cool... He's got 12 hitboxes and hard to wound. Pretty much his own defense. Evasive is nice when it's good.
Honestly, his defense comes from healing. I mean, built-in drink blood will just do that. But, honestly, like, this dude... I know a lot of people talked about him being, like, this version. Like, it makes sense based off, like, his bone. He is good in a scrum in the sense that, like, he facilitates a lot of ping damage, just melt a group of models real quick. Maybe not necessarily, like, the big models. I mean, that may be where you want to focus some of your damage, but, like, he himself is doing a whole bunch of that. I think keeping him alive is what kills things, ultimately. And funny enough, like, both of these cards are fairly similar to each other in structure. Like, if you look at them, like, they're basically two sides of the same, but, like, from a action standpoint, they kind of reflect each other, with the other one being a tad bit more aggressive in how he does his damage. He's more active in his damage rather than being passive like he is in this.
I have to say what I think he also excels at, and this may be shaded by some of my experience with playing the Awakened, but I've played him a couple times into Alpha Strike crews, and himself with Barbaros and all the helping that goes along with him, he absorbs an alpha rather well, just with the hard to wound and also just all the immense amounts of damage, all the immense amounts of healing he gets. And the one game that comes to my mind is he got alpha by the guild guy, though he was a summoner, his OG one's a summoner, and then his new one, he's the alpha.
Dashiell?
Yes, Dashiell, thank you. James, edit that out.
You got Basheled.
Yes.
It in.
So he got alpha'd. Basheel went into him end of turn one and only got one or two attacks because he had to walk a little bit farther than he expected. He was expecting me to come out. I don't think I left my deployment zone. And then he won a niche turn two and hit me with everything that Basheel had. I got down to four wounds, and before we were halfway through my activations, he was back up to full again. So he's just, I think, with how much shielded he can give out with his crew and all the healing, I think he is actually him. And then Barbaros being able to take the heat off of him when he gets in there, he's just really good at absorbing an alpha. Especially.
Admittedly, like alphaing into a crew with black blood is pretty sketch to begin with.
I've done it.
I believe you have.
But and then I think the evasive can't forget about that, especially with a lot of the new crews that have come out with Tall and Damien and some of the other ones that being able to avoid those blasts and everything. Now, granted, that makes him more likely to be the target, but then with that hard to wound, if they don't have blasts on min damage, it can be much harder to get blasts off of him. With the hard wound, plus he can soul stone it to a negative and things like that. He just, I think that can be overlooked quite a bit.
Cool.
But, yeah, and then dominate, I mean, that's a great ability. You know, nothing better than making a peacekeeper go stand in the corner and get to do nothing because it's stunned and staggered.
Yeah, especially since you could just make it take a walk. Yeah, just walk away.
Yep.
Yeah, just the base action itself is really strong, and then it has two pretty amazing triggers, and Thrall being the obvious best trigger.
I mean, range staggered on its own, like we've talked about it a number of times, range staggered on one is just super good. But, like, throwing in stunned in there is, like, you might as well just, like, cast ineptitude onto whatever it is that you're hitting with this thing.
And add a stat 7. Granted, you still need a 7 to hit the target number, but, I mean, if you're going to use your high card to get it off, more than likely with a mask.
Yeah, you're above stat against like 90% of the game with this thing. Like it's probably going to happen.
Yeah. Now I have to be careful as I made this mistake. I got to remember the insatiable ability that he has on the card, where you're getting that ping damage. That is once per activation. So don't do like I did my first game, and I think I got it off 3 times in one activation. So. I mean, that will definitely make things melt, but that's kind of, you know, cheater, cheater, pumpkin eater.
Yeah, it's great. And it, when you think about it in, like, conjunction with Totem, it basically just adds an extra damage to the Totem, which is fun.
Yes.
Though, with that said, I do think Bountiful Feast is hot garbage.
I think you're giving it a compliment by calling it hot garbage.
Yeah, it is absolute doggy doo-doo water. And, like, it's just because it falls into that same category as, on our favorite boy, Carver. He's got a similar action.
Essence, I think?
Yeah, that one. It's terrible. It's bad.
I've tried it a bunch. There's no flip on it.
Yeah, like, you want it to work. I mean, for something that's once per activation, like, you'd think it would have more teeth. But, like, as it stands, like, it's not a very big pulse, and the defense duel isn't too bad, and, I mean, it's only does one damage. Sure, like it has the potential to do the little heal, but, like, how often does it happen? How often does it, you know?
Not much.
For a once per turn action on a master, that shit should have been, like, range 6 and, like a defense 14. But that's neither here nor there, because thankfully he was given actions that are worth taking.
Yeah. And then also just kind of highlight too on mistakes I've made on playing or things that have come up that you don't really think about. On his free action where Marathion gets to drop a scheme marker, just to let you know, that is not a May. You have to drop that scheme marker. And this actually came and bit me in the butt in my Dashiell game I mentioned before. That Executioners really love that mandatory ski marker I had to drop if I wanted to use my free action.
Whoops.
Yes. Yes. Just be aware
Trail
of that.
Gore all over you.
If they do have the ability to eat your ski markers to get benefits, that is not a May. You must drop that ski marker.
Yeah,
but
that booze.
But most, I mean, that's a very corner case. 95% of the time, it's not going to really matter. And getting Marathion where he needs to be, especially early in the game, if you're playing a ball crew and with your setup on how much Castor can heal turn one, it is you, and I'm not exaggerating this, you could probably do, and obviously your opponent's going to say something about this, but it is not out of the realm of possibility to ping 6 or 7 times with Marathion in turn one if you are really trying to get him up the board to get that off.
So with that said, out of curiosity, so on his Devour, which benefit do you find yourself taking?
Oh, the pluses, without a doubt.
The pluses, yeah.
Yes. I mean, and again, if you're not real low on health, that Devour is, that's six severe damage because it's five and then the ping.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, I definitely get that. I do wonder if maybe the discard is a bit.
I have done it.
Not
once.
I think it's undervalued, honestly.
If the person is holding one card, mm-hmm. and you're not at the very end of the turn, so maybe they're holding it to get something off, and or it's the Black Joker, and they're holding on to it so they don't have to see it. I have done it. Mm-hmm. And I also think, coincidentally, it was also because I think, like, min damage was going to kill the model I was attacking. So using that to get rid of what I thought was either a card that they were going to need or the Black Joker, I have done it. But I would, again, 90% of the time, you're going for the double plus.
See, I do kind of wonder about that, though. Because, like, forcing a random discard is so good that it kind of makes me wonder, like, is there just too much card draw now in the game to where, like, it kind of, like, negates the benefit of such a strong ability? Because, like, in a game, you know, where you only have so many cards in your hand. So forcing a random discard, like, you can make them as their best card.
It is good, definitely.
It just kind of makes me wonder. Admittedly, you know, you use whichever one is benefiting you the most in the situation. Like, I feel like if they're down to, like, a half their hand or less, I think going for the discard is probably the way to go, if that's when you're attacking. Otherwise, if Castor needs the health, you go for the double plus. But I guess that's just sort of, like, my musings on it.
Yeah, at least for me, it's very corner case. I'd have to have a very specific reason to go after their hand. For the examples I used earlier, but yeah, mainly I'm going for that five severe, six with the ping.
So well, then,
kind of the last thing on his card is final preparations,
yes.
Where any in the end phase, friendly returned an eight may suffer two irreducible to take the. I mean, if you set it up, it's getting you points. So
about
phase,
that
so
though,
yeah.
That doesn't ignore engagement rank, right?
Correct.
So if you're engaged, yeah. It doesn't work. So like there's workarounds with it with your opponent. I was gonna ask Scott how many times you've personally ability and how often it's actually benefited you.
I have not used it at all, but I think that's more with way I've been playing Awakened. I've been going in scheme pools where I don't really have to get across the center line, mainly because
sure.
I can then keep his bubble of death closer together. And
so in that case, do you think that's a fault of just how you play it, or do you think that's more a GG thing where just the current does not support using that ability to its?
I think it's more of the way I've been playing him.
Sure.
I mean I can see the power of that, and I think you would need to, I think that would have to be something like using it on a scheme, like spread them out to get maybe that third one down, or like moving a model up, but it doesn't have the AP to get, let's say, leave your mark. Because again, Awakened is a bit of a bubble crew, and if you're thinking about getting that out there for breakthrough, unless maybe he's doing it to himself and he just needs to get one down, then maybe that. But I don't see, and obviously there's other ones that you can do, but those are the ones that really come to mind where he'd have models within that 8-inch. But yeah, like.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't benefit, like, set trap nearly as much, because if you have models near enemy models that you want to, like, set trap on, they're probably engaged, like, usually trying to be applying that offensive pressure, and therefore, like, the ability doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think it's more of a, not a condemnation of the ability, but just the way I've been playing Awakened, because it just seems like most of my games I've taken Awakened, I'm facing an Alpha Crew, so I'm like, okay, cool, I'll sit here in my deployment zone and let you come in, and then I'll melt you.
Interesting.
Well, it is worth pointing out he can do it on himself.
Yeah, yep.
So,
yeah.
That'd be really good if you had a model with, like, Deadly Pursuit, and then it could Deadly Pursuit and then do it, but I don't think there's any return models with Deadly Pursuit, so I'll have to live that dream another time.
Someday, me.
Well, there's the big angry Euripides-looking Vervent.
Not quite as big as I would have hoped.
Fair. I haven't seen it in my life yet.
Yeah, at least based off of the ones from the Gen Con thing last year, he seemed a little on the small side, but that could change. We complained about about Calypso, and we got that one fixed.
with all the Limes talk about him, I'm just wondering if he's going to come with some in his box. But yeah.
Honestly, though, I'm legitimately surprised that like these models aren't like coming out yet. Like they were shown these in the library are shown off with Damien's crew at last Gen Con. Like they had the prototypes there. So the fact that we're seeing like Tall and the Clampettes already and not these guys, I was like, what the heck?
Yeah,
what's up with that?
Since I think you could arguably say Rezzers and Neverborn are the two most popular factions, so I think that would definitely be a good economic reason to get these out as soon as possible.
I get why Damien came out like way before everything else, because like Arcanists waited the longest for the last run, and admittedly it's probably just a situation where like they look at the Neverborn and the Rezzer players and they go, these are our most delusional and fervent followers.
Yes.
And they're not going to go anywhere, so they'll wait for big scary horned boy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm definitely waiting.
They got us pegged. Yep.
But yeah, so I've gotten a few games with this guy. I with him, and I do like him. I think Feast on the Faithful is kind of very. At first, you look at it and you're like, "Oh, it seems okay." But when we get into some other models, specifically Atherac, that is a great ability. Everything else on there is, I mean, Faith on the Flesh is, you know, kind of keyword, and then Terrifying, Towering Figure, Ruthless, Hard to Wound, all things we've seen before. So, the Feast on the Faithful is money. Especially if you're bringing a lot of Black Blood models.
I just love that it makes him immune to being attacked by friendly models that are being obeyed.
Yes, yeah, it is good.
I love that. It's so great. but yeah, you're absolutely right.
So
Feast on the Faithful mixed with like Atherac and such like leads to some really silly unpack situations, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Oh yeah.
Before.
But yeah.
Really, I think it kind of reads one way, but then it comes up a lot more than you'd expect.
Oh yeah, you can make it pretty dirty, but his attacks. I mean, the Blood Rush is really good. Get those blasts off, so it makes him more maneuverable. I had one game with him where with the dirty movement tricks we'll discuss later on, and that double blast. I was in someone's backfield on turn one on corner deployment, and he still had AP left to go. So,
yeah, I've done some of that where I basically rolled in, attacked someone, blasted to the back of their stack of people, and then just kidnapped their master back into the back corner of their table half.
Yep.
And then like I also had other models just like ready to charge in not too long after that. So now they're stuck in a situation where like, do I turn around and try and save my master, or do I deal with the fact that I have like Cavern Nephilim like Barbaros about to just come up here and, you know, do the old Black Blood Bukkake on me and just, you know, ruin my day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
Because, like Barbaros just ends up being, like, MVP in those situations, four down.
Yep, he is the man. But, yeah, and that attack, I mean, he's got good triggers, especially since you got two triggers that can heal either yourself or another model. Granted, all my games, Castor kind of goes off and does his thing with his sword while the rest of the crew is cleaning up the pieces and scoring me points.
Sure.
The Visceral Rampage is another one. Talk about the kidnap. It's great. I haven't kidnapped anyone into my zone, but I have used it to, like you said, I haven't done it to a master, but pull one of their models away from the rest of their crew, and then made them regret that.
Yeah, like I almost feel like the ideal play with that is you know, setting up your ward stones. Somebody moves up a little foolishly, you charge through in on them, hit them, and then drag them back through ward stones and just cut them off from the opposing team and just melt them. I mean, it's very, very reminiscent of, like, the Dead Rider.
Yes.
You know, reaping people across the board. And, like it's I find that kind of, like, play style to be really kind of fun, even if kind of, like, dickish.
Yeah. I was surprised, again, that they made it a place instead of a push, like how they changed it on the Dead Rider. But, yeah, it's money. Yeah.
I mean, it also is just, like, infinitely less potential than Dead Riders.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, with the Dead Rider, you were quite literally reaping people across the entire table. So, in this situation, it's a tad more manageable.
Well, but, I mean, you know, if you get that perfect setup, you know, if they're at the end of your 2-inch engage or the 2-inch range on that, and then you move 6 inches back, and then you place on the other side, you're looking at, what's that, 10 inches of movement? So that's still a long ways. Not, yeah, like you said, not Dead Rider range, but definitely, I mean, in a perfect world, that could be, you know, 10 inches.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's not an insignificant number.
Yeah.
Especially with this crew, as quick as they can be, you know, running up and just smacking the shit out of whatever that you just hit. Or with how slow other crews can be, you know, you can somebody away where they just can't reasonably get to it.
Great way to break up a bubble.
Yes, sir.
But and then the free action, you know, similar to Awaken, but you get to take the charge action. Also, I had misread this with the trigger. You do get to place to Castor before you take the charge. So when I first looked at that, I'm like, well, that doesn't sound very good. I'm going to charge and then place to him. But now that place is before you take the charge. So it is you know, really good if, like, let's say Castor goes into something and you don't quite finish it off, and then you can pull your sword up with you, you know, and then finish it off. Or just, you know, because you want to have your sword by you, because who doesn't want to have a big living sword that doesn't die?
Yeah, I mean, because, like, people should remember that you, in situations where you have actions and like this that grant another action, you need to resolve the first action first and its triggers. So, yeah, that's why it places, because you have to resolve Broodmaster's Blade and its triggers before Marathine can take its action.
Yep. Just like how Misaki, too, when she has an obey and then she gets the focus trigger, they actually get the focus before they take the action from the obey.
So jumping back to Visceral Rampage, one situation I did have come up with this that I thought was incredibly amusing was into Tiri, charging in on Tiri and then having one of the ancient constructs take the hit. And so, like, I backed off with Visceral Rampage, yoinked the ancient construct with me instead. moving it super far from where, like, because, you know, they got their weird crap where they get to, like, take the hit from at range and junk. So it's like, I just, like, plucked that thing out of it. It's like, that's cool. Your take the hit model is no longer in your bubble, so here comes everything else.
Yep.
Well, it has toss on it, too, so it's good to get it.
Yeah. I mean, nobody wants, you know, a Iron Matron getting thrown into your face.
Yeah, absolutely. But you Rezzer guys must be spoiled, barely talking about the front of the card, but us guys, it's got maybe Castor Fervent does have a couple really good things on the front of his card. Ruthless, the foremost for... But he's also terrifying with hard to wound and 13 hitboxes and similar amounts, maybe... Well, do you think he heals a similar amount of the other title?
I don't think he does as easily.
Okay.
I think he ends up relying on other models to heal more than himself. The other model, he just has to hit and he heals like a metric crap ton. This one, on the other hand, like he's capable, but half the time it's going to require, like, you know, having a situation where, you know, charge one of your own models up and poke him in the back to heal. Or using, you know, like Gwil's ranged ability to heal him. Or like, you'll be using other things, I think, to heal him. Or just, you know, the sword. You know, I think I think the primary source of his healing on his turn will be just his bonus action, and if that hits, him healing off of.
Yeah, I would agree. He does heal less, but at least in my games, and again, this might be anecdotal on the way I've been playing him, is I've been really tossing him a lot into my opponent's backfield and just killing all their support models, so he's been taking less damage. Now, if I did more of where he's going toe-to-toe with their more tanky and or beady models, maybe I would notice that a bit more, but in my games, I've been kind of using him to leapfrog and get at the backfield models where
he's
uniquely good
at
that.
He's a good bully. Yeah, I don't think he stands up very well against things that are capable of swinging back with similar power. He just doesn't have the durability necessary for that. He very much falls into like the best defense is a good offense. So they can't hurt you if they're dead. So he's just good at killing the things that can't kill him back.
Yes.
And then hoping his other threats are a big enough distraction to keep them off of him while he does that.
Yeah. I mean, putting out that double blast, I mean, when I talked about it, I was mainly talking about it in his maneuverability. But if you're getting double blasts off on a severe 5 and you're hitting other models with 4, you're just setting them up to... be able to finish those models off quickly and or, like I said, bringing Marathine in to finish anything off that has like 1 or 2 health left.
Yeah, if you smack a group of 3 or 4 with that, other models rolling in and then pinging them to death with Black Blood will be super easy.
Yeah.
Because like 4 damage on like 90% of the game is like at least half their life, if not more.
Yep.
So,
and he's
like that just sucks for them.
When he alphas, he's going to have the focus on him with... models we'll talk about here
absolutely.
Soon.
Well, yeah, we can move on.
We'll go over the best living blade ever.
That makes sense.
I'm really stoked for this model. This model's going to be so awesome.
It's going to make me wish I knew how to do non-metallic metal.
No kidding. I'm going to pay somebody to this crap.
Yeah, but I love this totem. This is the best totem in the world. It beats all the doggos.
I mean, literally,
it beats everything out there.
It's invincible.
But I love this thing.
I mean, it's a totem that you can't get killed.
Yes.
So, like for all you know Neverborn players that you know cry about your totems despite having Huggy, not Huggy. You wish you had Huggy.
Mr.
Too.
Lord Chompy bits you, sir.
Mr.
Yes.
He's a nightmare to those who know.
Put some respect on that name.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, you know, they had to give you guys something that you couldn't mess up, so that's why it doesn't.
Oh, you underestimate me, sir. I can mess this up.
get it buried or something, you never get it back again.
That's what I did the first game I played against it. I used it as an ice pillar. It was gone for the whole game.
Nice. That is a good way of taking care of it. But,
I mean, it effectively kills the AP of Castor, because now his bonus action is just terrible. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you haven't faced this is, it's unkillable. The only way you can get rid of this model is, well, to bury it, and or you have to kill the master to make it get off the board, which I really love this new thing that they did here is just really cool. Now, it doesn't have a free action, so... but I'm more than willing to live with that. insignificance. It can only use its living. It can only use its attack action once in activation, but it's still decent. It's a stat 6 for a 4-cost minion. It does 2/2/3, ignoring hard to kill, and it heals your master on however much damage it does. So try to avoid your armored models with this because it's how much damage they take. So if you only hit an armored model and it only takes one damage, you're only healing one. The hard to kill doesn't come up a whole lot, but it is actually significant. I used him on 2 separate games to kill hard to kill models when they were not at their hard to kill. So it is useful. And it's
when it matters, it really matters.
Yeah. Because usually those hard to kill models, granted, you do have quite a bit of black blood in this crew, but depending on how you build it, it's not always going to be where you need it to be. And an ability on an insignificant model to get rid of an enemy scheme marker. You don't have to do an interact or anything like that because it is insignificant. But, again, it's one of those things. Maybe it only happens in 1 in 10 games. But especially with Caster Fervent's ability to pull it towards Castor, and then more than likely you don't have to worry about trying running it across the board. You can just get it to where you might need to get rid of that scheme marker or something like that. But yeah, mainly you're just using it for the most part to hit things and healing your master, which then pops abilities depending on which one it is. On awakened, it can ping for another damage, so if you're over healing your master, instead of being a 2/2/3, you're a 3/3/4, which is pretty good. Or if you overheal Fervent, he gets a free 2-inch move with that 2-inch reach of his. It can be money.
Admittedly, like this model basically acts as a, for anyone who like knows anything about Gundam, it's like a kite. It's the little things that float around and like shoot and whatnot. Like you can use it in that sort of manner, and like with, like you mentioned, with Awakened, yeah, it's like ranged pulse damage. It's pretty great. It's like it's dropping schemes and pulsing out damage, but with Awakened, it's basically like a 4th AP for an attack. So it's really easy for you to just have situations where you use your master to get something down to hard to kill or close, and then you just teleport this thing over, have it like charge through a group of models, and then just kill the thing in the back that's only on 1 or 2 health.
Yeah.
It's pretty good, but it kind of feels like a tar pit model, but keep in mind that it can't tie anything up ever. You can move through it and you're not engaged by it.
The one big downside of this model is it's an easy target for like discard effects and such. So if somebody can like target you, one of your models, and hit you and then force you to discards or whatever, this is a great, like, especially if it targets defense, this model is a big old target for that.
Uh-huh. Willpower 6 is decent, though, because a lot of those are willpower attacks. Cool.
So let's go with Atherak, because he seems to be a controversial model in this crew.
I don't understand why.
So Atherak is one of several henchmen that Castor has. He is also keyworded Nephilim, so you can bring him in your Queen of the Nephilim crews without having to pay an extra tax. So he's got a couple really good things on the front of his card. He's got the Faith of the Flesh, which is the one where if he overheals, he gets to move 2 inches, or he can take a damage to heal a model within 4 inches of him. He's got Ite Kethe. I'll probably butcher that really bad. So anytime a model... Anytime a model within 4 inches of him, and it's an aura, so it counts for him, he overheals, they get shielded. So turn one, you can really pile on the shielded with him and the Urn Bearers. He's got regen 1, hard to kill. So, you know, with Soul Stones, he's decently hard to kill. Not looking at him being a big frontline fighter. 5 defense, 6 willpower, 6 moves. So the one on the back of his card, his tactical action free action is what a lot of people say. And go, ooh, I like that. So if you hadn't heard about it, it's the Ward Stones. It's an 8-inch range. You basically put out 2 Ward Stones at the most 3 inches apart, and the enemy models can't draw a line of sight through the ward stones or the space between. So basically kind of a protection on gun actions, cast actions. And remember, if their models are in, if they have a model on the other side of it, they can't also target their own models. So like healing or luring their models out of danger or whatever the case may be, they cannot do that to their own models. But really powerful against gun crews. Now also remember too, with models that ignore line of sight, the ward stones don't do shit against. Looking at Tull.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
Ward stones is neat, but honestly, like, to me personally, the thing that really gets this guy going is the Edakithe and Faith in the Flesh and how those combo together and how they combo the Urn Bearers.
Yep.
Because you can get a ridiculous, like, just for this dude activating, you can hand out a bunch of movement, a bunch of shielded before he even takes any actions. And then of course you can throw out your ward stones. Then you can do cute things like, you know, attacking your master and just throwing a low mask at him and then just pushing him up towards the ward stones before he even needs to do anything to just really set up that alpha. I think this dude. And his Edakithe aura in particular is kind of what's important about him. Otherwise, he might as well just be like an over-excessive, like, crappy scheme runner. Wardstones is cool. It's great initially to, you know, to avoid getting blasted out of the water. It's a lot harder to use later on in the game. Otherwise, you're just going to have him kind of like background running and maybe ancient word blasting into some big groups of models or something.
Yeah.
I think his melee attack is, like, terrible.
Yeah, it's the only good thing about his melee attack, because it's only a stat 5 on an 8-stone henchman, is using the drawn to ward stones. Any low mask,
yep,
you're using it. So, for me, if I'm playing Awakened, I use that on Marathine to toss Marathine up the board so I can get him in the middle of the opponent's crew so I can start pinging him. Every activation turn one, you could basically ping, or doing it to Fervent because it's a 4-inch push,
yep,
and then when you punch him, he heals, so he gets another 2-inch push.
Yep.
So you can toss your master 6 inches up the board for the cost of any mask.
I mean, well, hell, you get that initial 2-inch push off of the bit. He'll move up into the aura around the Urn Bearers. You know, heal there, and then move another 2 inches, and then move his 4
yep
inches. So you could basically, like, it's like you could get like 8 inches of move there if you so desired. Plus, you know, a handful of shielded for multiple models,
yep,
there. Yeah, it's pretty goofy.
Yeah, I think other than turn one, you're talking about ward stones are hard to use later in the game. I think that is where the really good Atherac players are going to say, oh, this guy is money. And then the ones who maybe, and I'm definitely not at that level, anywhere near that, but just the different things you can do with the ward stones is where you're going to make or break this guy. Because just being able, even if they're not blocking gunshots on you, being able to cut off actions from their crew. So, like, let's say they have backline healers and they've thrown their big peacekeeper whatever up there and you put the ward stones between them, now they can't heal them. I think that's where you're going to get the money on this later in the game.
That's totally valid.
Yeah. So it's basically almost in a way you can look at it as a different form of a challenge without the opposed duel.
I do think, though, in that specific use, setting it up is going to be the difficult bit, because I think he's going to get backline targeted fairly early.
Oh yeah,
and I think he'll be in a situation where it'll be difficult for him to get where he needs to be to most effectively,
yeah,
drop the ward. But yes, like in theory and potential play, yeah, he could do things like that where he drops it in the middle of a fight or something and cuts off line of sight for healers,
yeah,
and various abilities.
And even if they don't cut it off completely, if they have to take a walk action and then do it, then I still think you're winning because you're making them take AP they may not normally have had to use to get so where they can get around the ward stones. I think terrain plays a big part in how good you get those ward stones. I mean, if there's some terrain, like you could put it between two houses or a stone in a forest, and just have it right up against there. It makes those warp zones much better than if you have to leave gaps on each side. Because even if they draw one line of sight through a warp zone, if they have one that doesn't go through it, then they get around it.
You've had a bad experience with that, haven't you?
Let's not talk about that.
Well, yeah, when I have used them, I've tried to put ward stones, like, next to a forest or something to basically just extend the effective, like, pseudo-stealth range type stuff.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the big thing, is if you can get the ward stones mileage in later turns, not just turn one, maybe turn two to throw your models up the board, I think that's where he's going to shine, and that'll be the big difference on whether he's just a mediocre model or, you know, a model that making you or keeping your crew alive and or making it harder on your opponent.
Yeah, because, like, don't get it twisted. Like, he's a finesse piece.
Yes.
Like, he's made of tissue paper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is not where the guy you want to be using your soul stones on.
Well, he's a great compliment to Hayridden, but that's not the guy. We can talk about Barbaros next, because this is a guy I've wanted to bring a long time and not legally been allowed.
Barbaros is the fucking man.
Yep.
I love this guy.
So,
like I've had a number of instances with him now where, like early game, like, somebody has one model extended just ever so slightly, and you just throw this dude into him. He gets his built-in shove aside, shoves him right back into their group. He goes up there, engages two or three of them, and just ruins those models' lives.
This is the guy you want to be spending your soul stones on. This is your frontline guy who is going to hopefully tank everything. Also, if you want to move Fervent up the board even more, you could shove aside on Fervent and push him up the board. So that can give you some more free movement for that alpha with your master eating into their backfield. I did that once. Felt a little dirty. I won't lie on that, but it was very effective.
Yeah, using Bring It on Castor is pretty cute.
Yep.
But no, like honestly, he just rocks. Like, everything about this dude, just, he rocks. And, like, I love getting to actually use this model that I had sitting around for forever. Him getting up there, and, I feel like I've just trademarked the Black Blood Bukkake at the point. But, like, this is the model that really made it happen. This is the model that made it a thing for me. He just gets up there and he just messes him up, and nobody wants to punch him back, because he's gonna be like, the value you get out of punching him is gonna be less than what you get back, because most people are min 2 and he's got armor and he's gonna bleed and he's gonna do 3 damage back across 3 models.
Yep. I love the fact that they gave him defense just, 6 when they eroded him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they realize that's his point. You know, he's supposed to be a tar pit, a melee tar pit model. So him with the defense 6 armor. And Caught in the Ring in particular really just sort of screws people up. And, like, when you get them in those situations where their models are positioned, like, poorly because you shoved them up in there and clumped them into each other, making a good old sad triangle for whatever model that you got in the middle, there really isn't a whole bunch they can do about it. Unless, of course, you know, they have a bunch of out-of-activation movement, and, I mean, that's a whole other conversation, really. But usually he can get up there and hold him in there and be fine long enough for, like, an Urn Bearer to roll up and start, like, down to the last dropping and just really just pulsing out the mega ping damage to just melt most models.
He's good. I would say he is probably, in my book, the one auto take I would always have with this crew.
I would always want to bring him, at the very least.
Over Gwil?
Over Gwil? Yeah.
Okay.
Though, I mean, admittedly, it's like the commercial, you know, why not both?
Yeah. Well, I just think, too, that if you're not taking Barbaros, that is going to make it easier for your opponent to get into your backline squishy models, and we do have some in this crew, so Barbaros needs to be there. Going, no, sir, you'll be attacking me.
And honestly, that's probably one of the biggest is that it is somewhat reliant on its backfield models, and they're all very squishy. And the only way to protect them that the crew has is unadulterated aggression and engaging as many of them as possible and just like physically keeping them from getting to them, you know? Because otherwise the other models are gonna fall apart and you've basically just lost. Like this is probably the closest thing to what I'd call a tanky model in the entire crew.
Well, I would say he's the only tanky model in Neverborn, but he's not in Neverborn, so.
Nope. Your usurper did that.
Yep.
Neverborn out there did it to themselves.
Well, I think Gwil's cool. I have never actually put him on the table, but pretty stellar.
I like Gwil.
Yeah, he's
honestly.
He
I think
he
has the best.
Go ahead.
He has the best implementation of decay in the entire game, as far as I'm concerned. Like, it's awesome. And
it's pretty
like,
dumb how good Leech's trigger is.
Yeah, and the fact that it's built in, it's fantastic. Yeah, because like honestly, like it's a bubble crew that wants to clump up as many enemies as possible, and then he's just gonna walk up and just start blasting it, and he's like, okay, I'm killing you while I'm healing my friend.
Yeah,
it's great.
it's not
great.
A gun.
Yeah, screw that. Yeah. Rezzers aren't allowed to have guns, and neither are Nevermen, so, like, that's why.
True that.
With that said, though, I have forgotten Whisper in their air more times than I'm looking.
It's, like, the easiest ability because it affects the card you're not looking at.
Yeah. If I remember it 25% of the time, I'm doing good, but yeah. And, I do like about it that it is a May, so if you got a stock hand, you don't have to do it. Just want to keep that. But he is relatively survivable with hard to wound and disguised. Again, he has no scratch, so there's no reason for this guy to get up in the mix of things. He's just standing in the back, handing out injured and healing your models, and then all the overhealing goes into effect. It is to be noted he does not have any overhealing abilities on his card. So you don't get anything from that, but he can facilitate the ones you have, whereas a model, if it would heal, it can, in fact, not heal, reduce the healing to zero to get the benefits of an overheal ability on his card. So I have yet to do that, but, you know, it's one of those things that I think would be like 1 in 10 games, 1 in 8 games, but when you do use it, it's going to be one of those things that, yeah, it's worth having it there, but not something that you're probably going to be doing a whole lot.
Yeah, he's like he's a backfield blaster that's also like an enabler for word abilities.
Yep.
Like he's there to make sure you can still do it even if you're not at, you know, max
yep.
health.
And then his two great free actions, ability to hand out a focus to a friendly keyword model. And Sanguine Evocation, which is, you know, Leviticus's bread and butter free action. So, obviously, for myself, and I'm probably for you, you're using Wise Counsel turn one, probably maybe turn two to hand out focus to maybe, you know, Master Barbaros, and then probably using Sanguine Evocation to set up those cards to get off your decays.
I mean, or you could just focus yourself.
Oh, yeah, you could do that. But I think especially early game, turn one when you're setting it up, you want focus on your castors. But
well, yeah, I was saying later in the game, I feel like I'm less inclined to use Sanguine, like in general, over Wise Counsel. But that's just me. I value focus too much.
And then Essence Transfer, another great one if you need to pop your master. With 4 health, you know, you steal it from someone else and give it to your master. So, you know, 12-inch range, you just need a 4. So, and then Dispel Magic, again, not one of those things you're probably going to be using a whole lot, but it's always nice to have it when you need it.
When it matters, it matters.
Well, and Dispel Magic is, I think, always a TN-12, but he has it at
yes,
7.
Yes, that 7 is so nice.
It's good for defense or offense.
Especially maybe those...
Yeah. This is also the only way that a Neverborn can turn off healing. It's big for
yes.
us.
It's kind of, especially for demises, a good way for them to get around demises that heal. So, or just crews that like to heal in general. So,
yeah, you didn't do that one recently.
I did not do that to your Serena. No, I did not.
Wild Will.
At least not with Gwil, I didn't.
Unseal the engine. Have you guys brought him with?
I did. No. I did try it out, and I was underwhelmed. I tried it twice, and I didn't feel I was getting my bang for my buck on 8 points.
Honestly, he's there for power of the engine.
Yep.
But power of the engine requires specific setup. So, like, getting it and then getting this model up there, it's like, it's slow.
Well, and interestingly, power of the engine is almost just like that action we said was. This one heals him, but he handed out, which means that multiple times to a person, right?
Well, it's once per turn. The reason why this version doesn't suck and the other one does is because of Icon of Life. So the ideal situation is you have multiple Black Blood models up engaging a bunch of enemy models. You roll this dude up and you pop off power up the engine. And so anytime one of your Black Blood models fails this, they're going to be popping off their Black Blood. They're going to be pinging it out, and they're going to be hurting enemies. And then, if you look at it, it says, for each other model damaged by this action, it heals one. So then it would heal the one, but you could, instead of healing it, you could just pass the healing back off to your friend. So the theory is you get enemies that are failing it, and then you get friends that are failing it. And since you can, you know, auto-fail these things, they'll just fail it. They'll ping themselves for one, bleed, and then automatically heal it right back up afterwards. So, like, depending on the situation, if you got three Black Blood models sitting up there engaging three enemies, and you roll up and do this, those three enemies are each going to do a target number 12 willpower duel, which is admittedly not amazing, but it's potential there. And then they're going to, all three of those models are going to take basically three instances of one damage. And like that's where the value is, in my opinion.
Yeah, in a lot of sense.
His other auras, like his bonus actions are cool. They're neat. I think the auras are really small though. And the Atlas Strike.
50 minute, but...
Yeah, I mean for what it is, like I would want it to cover most of them. But it is what it is. And Atlas Strike is cool, but it being stat 5 is just a bummer. So yeah, like you bring this dude for power of the engine, and I'm not really convinced that it's
not for 8 stones.
Yeah, for eight stones, like that's Othorak. That's, you know, that's Gwil, right?
Yep.
And this is just a...
I do think that Ritual of Cleansing, like being able to say no to stunned, can be against like a stun heavy crew like a Pandora or something, but
yeah, and in that case it might be a decent like tech pick. The only issue there is he's slow and he needs and the aura is 4 inches, so he'd be close to them in order for it to matter. But if he's, you know, spending most of the game like trying to catch up to all of his other models that just, you know, shifted 6 inches without spending AP, you know, like, but yeah, he's just considerably slower. And, like, I don't know. Like, if he had, like, toss or something, that'd be cool. Like, that would have been nice. But I think that would have, like, required, like, to set the model up to function more differently.
I would trade the whole back of his card for toss.
Yeah. honestly, if he had, like, ceaseless advance or something... You know, or I don't know, something to like just move end of activate turn or something so he can, like, just so he can get up the board a little bit better so he can actually get up there to where his aura matter. But as it stands, I think those are too small. And the one thing that you bring him for in this crew, which is, you know, power of the engine and Icon of Life, like, he needs to be close to you. I just don't think he's fast enough. Otherwise, his melee action is just sort of like mediocre.
It's also worth pointing out that most of this crew doesn't ignore terrain at all. Along we didn't mention, but he does have unimpeded, which is pretty nice on some.
So, and I think Gwil also, he's a move 6, isn't he? Or is he just move 5?
I think he's move 5.
Okay, yeah. Well, that can be big on the right boards.
And also, like, he just doesn't really have, like, as reliable of a means of getting himself shield to set up, you know, Scars of Chirrut. So, like, I don't know. He's just, he's in a weird place here. He might be better with, but even then, like, he's still kind of...
Nice looking model, though.
Oh, I mean, he's awesome looking, but I have, like, no desire to build that thing.
Well, is that all the enforcers? No. There's one other cool enforcer. As a Lucius boy I'm excited for. Die last night to Curio, so I wouldn't... That particular matchup.
Yeah, I'm about to say, my experience with White Eyes is him just dying.
He's a pretty weird piece. He has abilities that kind of want him. Like, when he punches, he gets shields. He's terrorized on your heels. And nowhere to hide strips shield off of stuff. This guy really does not work next to anything that hits hard.
Yeah, he's got the Ruguru problem. But I am a little bit higher on him than when we first talked about him. Because I kind of overlooked, glossed over... Maybe didn't pay attention enough to it. The unnerving presence, I think, is why you would want to really take this guy as a tech piece against things that do have resistance triggers. Because it is a 6-inch aura of take your resistance triggers and you pack them up and you don't get to use them.
Yeah, I think into the right matchups, that could be absolutely... Like Tony not being able to punch you back, you know?
Yeah.
Or...
Zip not getting to blast away.
Not being able to... In those cases, absolutely. But in those cases, he also becomes like an immediate target, and like that defense force is backbreaking.
Yep. Now I haven't taken him in a Castor crew yet, but I think he would be better in a Castor crew, just for the sheer amount of healing that you could potentially put on this guy. You know, granted, he's probably not the best one to do it to. But if you wanted to keep him alive, I think a Castor crew would definitely help out as opposed to being in a Mimic crew. Now the Mimic crew does have a bit of healing in it, mainly off triggers.
Yeah, at least Castor's crew has enough like actual potential threats to where this guy kind of falls down on the priority list.
Yes.
And actually, cause I feel like he's best used as like a second string assassin model where like you're engaging things, you're fighting things, and then White Eyes comes in to pick something off.
And he does have stealth, which helps out. He can be, again, second line, and like, you know, the lone marshal just can't pick him off from 14 inches away or something like that. I think the unnerving presence is his big selling point, and he's definitely going to be a tech pick when you're expecting that stuff. It'd be very funny though, I mean, I wouldn't want it to happen to me, but playing Pandora and someone brings White Eyes against me, so Candy is all very much a sad little girl.
Well, I think the two best things on the card are, number one, his cost is only 7, which is nice. He's has health over his cost, so he's not super expensive, but I think that he has is Inhuman Physiology and Terrorize. So I think if you can figure out the right pull the trigger and keep him around for that time and do something pretty influential, but a lot of stuff.
Well, I have to say, in our game we had, you used White Eyes. The other thing I think he is good for is against Corporal, because he has, with his wrecked with spasms and stuff like that, and I think he could also be a tech pick if you think you're going to be facing a lot of Corporal. Especially in a Castor crew where he's going to get more healing and that's more likely to happen. But, the unnerving presence is where it's at with this guy.
He's also one of the few models that doesn't ignore black keep.
Yes. You have to watch out.
Whoops.
All right. Let's talk about the real money of the crew. I'm hot on the Kevin, if you guys.
I've heard you once or twice mention this model in passing, I think he's good. He's not as good as some of the other big boy Nephilim, but I definitely think he is worth taking in a return crew. And he's also the keyword in Nephilim, so you know, something else you could grow a young into if you don't want to mature for some reason.
I honestly think that's like the best use of the if you're full up on your quota for matures, you turn him into a into a cavern.
But yeah, I mean, he's got the usual Nephilim stuff. We've got the Black Blood Regen 2. He does have stealth, which is nice, and he has he doesn't have flight, but he has the next best thing in expert getaway, where he's ignoring terrain and models. He's got the Faith in the Flesh, which is the return thing where he gets the 2-inch move and he overheals, which beginning of the game he's definitely going to get with a regen, and then with the Urn Bearers you're going to get it again. So he'll start off with some shielded and some 4 inches of movement before he activates, along with his ambush. You know, you're looking at potentially 7 inches of movement on his activation and free action on turn one. But yeah, I mean, I think he's good. He's the yin to the yang on the mature, where matures want to be in close so that they can use their 2-inch reach and their abilities to their advantage. This guy especially wants to kind of maybe hang out on the edge and then kind of jump in where he's needed to finish things off and or score your points. So his other free action, Forge, again, one of those situational ones, but it's good when you need it.
This guy, I see three uses for this model. One is like your typical like co-pilot alpha strike with Castor. You know, Castor drags one of these up with it, then he charges into the things, and then this thing follows up. Second being an incredibly expensive flanker, schemer, killer, / scheme runner. I mean, it's technically capable of, you know, dropping 2 scheme markers and with ambush. And then the third use for it is actually playing bodyguard for your Urn Bearers. Just because if somebody decides they want to try and go in on an Urn Bearer and then you run this thing in, its melee attack gets unlocked. And honestly, it makes me wish there was more access to, like, hazardous terrain with this. Setting that up is just absolutely monstrous to do it. I mean, because it turns into a 3-5-7 at that point. You automatic push models too if you hit with the melee attack. Like, echolocation's awesome. Like, you kind of use it to, like, bait a situation where, like, somebody goes in on tries to go in on one of your Urn Bearers, and then you echolocation, teleport yourself back in, and just, you know, go, okay, that's cool, you know, and shove you into Black Blood hazardous terrain, you know, melt your face off.
Yeah, I think it's overlooked is on his echolocation, because most people are doing the placing, or maybe if they want to get a scheme marker down, they'll use that. But I think the stagger trigger is undervalued by a lot of people. And mainly one, as we were talking about with Awaken, staggered on range is always good. And in conjunction, if you are taking the Awaken version, his scratch attacks move. And if they have been staggered by the Cavern Nephilim, then you're just talking some easy meat there. You know, on average, they're going to be move 3 with the staggered against the stat 6 move attack is pretty good. And that means they've taken a little bit of damage already, depending on, you know, what the Cavern Nephilim did. So I think that can be a way to set things up. And
yeah, and it does save Castor from spending an AP stunning them.
Yep, exactly. Or if you, like, yeah, like, doing it himself, or he goes in and beats something up that's already been staggered, and then he uses his one attack to push something away, giving it staggered and stunned, and not having to, instead of maybe pulling it in, pushing it away, so it makes it harder for them to score. So I just think that stagger trigger is undervalued, especially since, you know, depending on your target acquisition on that, you could hand out staggered potentially, you know, if you're getting a double blast on that, 2, 3, even maybe 4 models, if you're, you know, really lucky and or your opponent has really clumped up and maybe hasn't seen what the Cavern Nephilim can do. So I think that is an undervalued trigger. I mean, and also, I mean, the built-in trigger on handing out distracted to every model that's been damaged is good. But for me, with how much focus is out there, I would rather do the staggered, assuming I hit it, because, you know, he's a minion, so he, you know, can't build it in, but I'd rather go for the stagger.
And, I mean, given this thing, Grave Spirit's touches is funny.
Yes. Regen 4 and like... terrifying? Super good.
Yeah, it's yes. funny.
That said, it's also pretty damn good with a couple of the Neverborn upgrades. Ancient Pact, I mean, it's not flipping a ton of cards. I've done it just for the card draw. But Inhuman Reflexes is actually pretty good with him if you're into, like, a matchup. Because that Scamper lets you keep out of stealth range pretty well. He gets Blade Rush and can charge aged, so he becomes kind of a capable scoring machine.
Speaking of upgrades and Inhuman Reflexes, we were remiss to not mention Marathine with that. Just auto charging through and getting pings on him is kind of funny. So like that's definitely if those people do.
Oh yeah. Well,
Well, my two favorite things about this guy, one is pretty obvious, I think, but Ferocious Claws has Pick the Bones built in. A couple times I've gotten this guy to the backfield because he's I'll focus charge, kill a backline model to drop a ski marker, and I'll focus charge again, drop another. So he can be pretty solid in those situations. Obviously, his defenses are somewhat limited, but the second thing is kind of a weird thing that I realized kind of the other day, but Blind Fighter saying he can't act effectively means the enemy cannot remove his focus unless they do something explicitly.
Yep, that is true.
That is a good point.
It did matter because I tried to tie one up with a Swamp Hank.
Will-O-Wisps.
Yeah, I charged a Will-O-Wisp into a Cavern Nephilim, and then my melee action doesn't matter. But the Whoops. Stun did prevent him from killing me and dropping Marker, because reasons. So it was still good, but...
I think it's a good model.
Expensive. Yeah. I like him more Nephilim, probably, than earned, but...
I think he's more of a benefit to Nephilim in general.
Yeah.
I've always taken one, so I've feel like I get a good mileage. I mean, he's not great, he's not bad, he's just, I think he is a good model for his cost and what he does.
Well, we have two models left. Blood Vessel, honestly, I feel like is barely worth it. I barely see people
bring them. I bring them, sir. Yes.
Well, never mind.
No, don't skip the Blood Vessel. Okay, so I will agree. He's not the best. He's not going to be in many lists, but he is a tech pick, and he is basically a crappy the Molly models that jump around. Krulligan. Yes, he's a crappy Krulligan.
Hmm. Okay.
So I have taken him twice, and mainly for I brought him for the strategy. I brought him one time for Guard the Stash. And the other one that has the markers that you have to go to. So basically, he gets me a point and then dies.
Sounds about right.
So that is all I'm looking for him to do. If he scores me 1 point, then he has done his job and then he can die. If he gets me 2 points, then that's just icing on the cake. Because since he can do... So what he has is making him a crappy Krulligan. He has Sacred Duty. So it costs you an AP... So it's not an ability. It's a 10-inch range. You need a 7 to get it off. And basically, he can jump to a non-minion return model.
If he has more than 4 health, you need
yes,
5.
That is true.
Yeah.
I have done the on the guard trigger, where so that means the model he jumps to, anyone who attacks it is -1 to their attack action. So you can kind of give basically... whoever he goes to gets a little bit harder to kill, but that's basically I'm using him to score me 1 point, and if he gets me 2, that's good. Turn 1, I tried to jump him because the 2 times I took him, I tried a 2 urn bearer list, and I jumped him so he landed between both urn bearers' auras. So that kind of triggered the urn bearer thing that we'll cover here in a little bit, but yep, that's what he does. He jumps to something, scores me a point, and then dies.
I don't have anything to add on this model.
Okay, it does have hard to kill, so it's
at yeah. Least got and he's 5 cost. I'm not expecting him to do a whole lot.
Should have been 4.
Could be hard for sure.
Yep.
Does he stat 6 move in duels? Nice.
I wish he had regen, but it can't have everything.
Well, the Urn Bearer is very, very much worth talking model to talk about.
I was literally going to say the Urn Bearer is the most important model in this entire crew, as far as I'm concerned.
It doesn't necessarily seem that way when you see it done a certain way one time.
Yeah, its auras, rather.
He has a lot of them.
Are far too important. Yeah, the auras are far too important, and down to the last drop is too busted with models with black blood. This is the model that enables the shenanigans. This is the thing that really kind of just sets everything off. Pools of blood. Enemy models treat the area within 2 of this model's hazardous terrain, which is in of itself is great. But additionally, once per activation, another friendly return model ends a move within 2, that model may heal 1. So with most of the models, like Faith in the Flesh, if you move within that, you heal, well then you move again, move 2. So like this just, it's just like a range extender on things, it's extra healing. Then of course, you know, when a friendly return model within 4 would heal in excess of its maximum health, this model gains shielded 1. It also gains shielded off of black blood. That's from Fill the Earth. So like, you could have a situation where like you have like Othorak activate, you know, he does like Faith in the Flesh and he like pings himself a point of damage and heals someone in excess. So when that happens, like they gain a shielded and this thing gains a shielded and then they move 2 because of it. Well, they moved into this thing, so now they're healing again, so there's more shielded popping out, and then they move even more, and, like, this is the enabler of basically everything in this crew for, like, unpack, and if this thing can survive later on, if it wants to, yeah, it's just going to be not emptying the urn. It's going to be down to the last dropping a whole bunch, and it's just going to just put its hazardous aura and its hemorrhage aura in just really awkward places. And, like, I mean, I've pulled off Empty the Urn, like, because it's really not hard for this thing to get 3+ shielded. And I've had that, like, I've had that save Castor before. Like honestly, if you can pull off Empty the Urn, it's oftentimes a massive momentum swing. Because I had that go off where, like, oh, yeah, heal Castor 4... And, like, he now, like moves or he pulses and he gains focused. And, like, next thing you know, now he's coming back in with full ferocity rather than having to play defensive. But, like, down to the last drop with Black Blood models is stupid. Like, it's range 10. You only need a 4. The target and enemy models within pulse 1 of the target suffer 1 damage. So you do this, and it's like, I'm pinging you 1, and then it's pulsing 1. But that's also going to trigger black blood, so you're pulsing 1 again. So for a 4 at range 10, you're doing 2 instances of 1 damage as a ping, which, again, if you've set up, like, Barbaros or whoever engaging 2 or 3 models, your little 6-stone model from 10 inches away just did, like, 6 points of damage irresistibly for a 4.
Yeah. And kind of the key difference, I think, between this and, like, Black Blood Pustule, which is something I do a ton in, is that I think they're both 10-inch abilities, but when I do it on Hayridden, I have to stone for quick reflexes, and I have to flip every time I do the damn thing I want to do. So I'm paying a health for every ping, and I have to hit team times, whereas this is one and done, just do 2 damage to the things.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Don't overlook, it's got a correct stat 6 lure, so when we were talking about Fervent pulling a model in and placing it on the other side, if you need to, you could use a stat 6 lure on a 6-cost model to pull that model further into your crew. It's money.
Another thing Scott's done to me.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's got a crappy range attack, which you never want to use because, frankly, if you're using it's a scratch attack on this model, then things have gone horribly wrong. What you said earlier about how much shielded you can get on this model for Empty the Urn, if this had a flip and had a trigger to allow you to do it again, turn one, you could easily get 6 shielded on this model, and you could do this twice in a turn. Now, it doesn't have that, but I think like my second or third game, I wanted to see how much shielded I could get on these guys on turn one, and I think I got 12 shielded on them. Turn one, that getting the Empty the Urn is easy peasy lemon squeezy.
It's not hard. It is not hard in the slightest. With that said, again, this is another model that's made out of tissue paper. And if something with even like a mild bit of weight behind it even comes within like breathing distance, it's dead.
You got to watch out for guns because, I mean, this thing, other than getting shielded, it has no defense. No defense and 6 wounds, so watch out.
Yeah, it would be a really really sad day if you start the game off and your opponent gets to go first and just snipes this thing out from under you before you get to do anything else.
Yeah.
That'd be a perfect example
of a purple model.
Yeah, that'd be the worst.
Yeah, if Sheamus would teleport twice and then shoot it in the face and it dies.
And that would be a very good use of Sheamus's activation.
Yes, it would.
Honestly.
Well, it would be very good.
Because that would 150% kill your unpack. It would be terrible.
Yeah, but this model, it may not be the engine that drives the thing, but it's definitely the gas. I've experimented taking 2 of them, and it felt good, but near the end of the game, I didn't think I was getting the mileage, but like turns 1, 2, and 3, it did feel kind of nice.
These things are the Mentos to Castor's.
There you
joke.
Go. I like that. But yeah.
Yeah, and down to the lamp heels, Castor. Keep that in mind too.
But I think that's everything. So we kind of touched on a little bit before on the upgrades. So I wanted to kind of, in generalization, I would say overall the Rezzer upgrades are better. But I think Fervent actually gets more mileage out of Neverborn upgrades. And I think Awaken gets more mileage out of the Rezzer upgrades. Mainly because I think what you touched on with Scamper and Blade Rush, I think you get more use out of that in a Fervent crew. I mean, I don't think it would be out of the realm of possibility to put one on each both Marathine and Castor.
Sure.
And I just think, especially with wanting the mass trigger on Castor Awakened Pseudo Obey, I think the Whisper is good on him. Although having the regen one on him wouldn't be bad. And I think possibly, I haven't tried it yet, he could actually get use out of the free action to turn corpse markers into focus. Because if Marathine is in a place you need him, then he doesn't really use his free action. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying that the possibility is there.
You know, it's kind of a shame that on Awakens version, it doesn't give you the option to also to either drop a scheme or a corpse. That'd be kind of
fun. Would be nice. But we could probably thank the Resurrectionist upgrades for not allowing that to happen.
You guys.
But yeah, so that's kind of my 2 cents on the upgrades, because I know a lot of people, or at least online, Discord, stuff like that, have been talking that they like this crew more in Rezzers. Just for the fact that the upgrades. I also think, and I may lose my Neverborn card for this, I think that outside of Nephilim keyword stuff, I think you have better options to bring stuff out of keyword in Rezzers than you do in Neverborn.
Well, I'm about to say, like, what does Neverborn have that's going to compete with, like, Anna Lovelace or, like, Val?
Or I was thinking Manos.
We don't talk about those ones.
Or Manos. Yeah, Manos. Manos is like, yeah, fucking
Ted is
Manos.
Just as good as Nautilus.
Yeah, Manos is awesome.
I think a mature, and I haven't tried it yet, and I want to do it, would be good in a return crew. Now, granted, I don't like the paying the extra cost, but I think that gives you more lean into the Black Blood where with Urn Bearers and stuff like that.
I think Dead Rider would be fun.
Yeah. Well, you...
More kidnap actions.
Yeah, but you have a weird fascination with the Dead Rider. Not that you're not the only one, but
I mean, I haven't played the Dead Rider in a long, so.
But I mean, I think that's my opinion on that. That if I had to make a choice and I had to play Nevermore and I wanted to bring Return, it was probably more likely going to be Fervent than Awakened. Mm-hmm.
The Ruthless does give him a pretty big advantage on a Nevermore thing.
Not a whole lot of Ruthless, but I think we may have talked about that in another podcast.
We have, yeah.
We have been very upfront about the things.
Nothing.
Hey, all I have to say is 4th edition can't come fast enough for the Neverborn.
Can't believe this betrayal.
Yep, I know.
I find your lack of faith, Ben.
But I also do think that the purple and green scheme on the cards is the prettiest dual faction colors.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't think
that's
really up.
Yeah, they are complementing colors.
They nailed that.
Yep. Hey, you guys got anything else? I think we covered just about everything.
We covered about it. So listen to this and you'll be an expert.
You can go out there and win some Texas tournaments with Castor.
Well, without like getting into like a tier list category.
Is that